This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Commissioner Paul Galante. Commissioner Galante heads up the Department of Veteran Services for the Commonwealth of Virginia. Commissioner Galante brings an esteemed and honored background military service to our country. He served in Vietnam War and was a POW for 7 years and returned to have a very successful career in the military and after retirement as well. And throughout his career, one of the issues that have been near and dear to his heart is supporting our veterans as they transition into the civilian workforce. Commissioner Galante, thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome, Roger. It's a pleasure to be here.
Our topic today is really just going to be, we're going to be talking about our veterans. We've been at war now for 10 years, and veterans are returning to civilian life or they're wounded veterans who are going through rehabilitation and either staying in service or transitioning to the civilian workforce. And that's a challenge, and frankly, from my perspective, an opportunity for business, for society in general, to incorporate and take advantage of the talents and the capabilities of these people who have been dedicated in defense of our country. I just want to try to put some of this in perspective. Can you give us an idea or feel for how many veterans are currently sort of moving from active duty to the civilian work, the civilian world?
Well, it's interesting. There are two different groups. One are the ones who are retiring. The military can retire so young, and that's actually a group. They're doing that a lot better now than they used to. All the services have a transition period where they get exposed. We have people from our agency and other agencies in the state and brief them on things that are happening in the world, and the Virginia Employment Commission is supposed to be having a few things like that because it's different. They were in a totally different career than their civilian counterparts, and they got to relearn how to speak English, get rid of all those Pentagon acronyms and the buzzwords and the jargon that civilians don't understand. The younger ones, interestingly enough, there are downsides for having a rotten economy. But one of the good sides is we have an incredible reenlistment rate among our soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines, because they're not really dumb. They just look and they can see the handwriting on the wall, and a lot of them stay in. The ones that get out, I'm not sure of the title numbers, the whole numbers. We don't keep track of it. There's no way to easily keep track of it.
Yeah.
Although we do run around and see it. It's the big that they do have a problem. The younger ones, typically, their first experience, their first real job was going in the military, and it takes them a long time to unwind and get to where they feel comfortable around civilians basically the culture is totally different.
Yeah, well, that's a good sort of segue, and one I thought we could talk a little bit about are some of those challenges that our veterans, whether they're young or old, face in terms of that transition to the civilian workforce. And it's interesting, the thing you mentioned about learning English again and forgetting those DOD acronyms. I worked for the government for 20 years, and you develop a whole different language in terms of what you're talking about and the acronyms and the code in a certain sense of what's used. I would think that for veterans, it would be just the reverse. There's language of civilian life and just the everyday sort of nuances of what you're dealing with, that they just, it's going to be almost like a different world for them. What do you see as some of those transitional issues that they face?
Well, exactly right. in the military, it's interesting that I spent almost my entire career defending freedom against communism. That was the cause celeb. That's what we were studying for. And yet, if you look at it, the most socialistic environment in the entire world is the military. I mean, it's a very paternalistic society. So all your cares are taken care of. You get sick, the doctors are right there, all that other stuff. When they get out, one of the things that really hits them between the running lights, right between the eyeballs, is they suddenly have to take care of themselves. And some of them, frankly, that's their biggest problem, is realizing that somebody's not going to tell them what to do. And it's ironic that these guys are defending freedom so much, have been so used to being told what to do, having everything spelled out, having instructions to do this, instructions to do that, that there are too many options for them, and some of them really have trouble making up their minds and making choices. There are, in a lot of ways, the best thing that ever happened to this country is the GI Bill, because that gets them out of, when you go out of the military, it gives them some time to get their feet, you know, their heads above water and do some thinking and some creative thinking, and actually they can acclimate themselves to a totally different world fairly quickly. Particularly when they go back to school, we see this a lot in our universities. Thanks to this GI Bill, they've got more opportunities now than they've had any time since World War II, and we're finding out that the 145,000 veterans are attending Virginia's colleges now. And right now, as we speak, and they will end up being probably the leaders of their classes, leaders of a bunch of things, because they're older, more mature, and they've got a lot of their wild oats already sown.
And that's a good thing. In terms of that, and that's interesting, and I hadn't really thought about that, about the issue of the options that someone faces, or just, maybe that's not the right word, maybe it's the choices that you face in everyday life that, take for granted at this point, whether what insurance you're going to get, what phone you're going to, sign up for, just the myriad of choices and decisions you have to make as an individual when you're operating every day. When, even when I was in the government, I wasn't in the military, but a lot of those decisions in terms of your infrastructure and things you were going to use were made for you. And there were a certain set of rules around things that you could and couldn't do.
Yep.
But in the civilian world, you really are, frankly, I think, it's that transition to being on your own. I think that thought about, university and just going to college, that is that transition period that some of them are going through, post service. But are there, from your perspective, are there strategies that you've seen people develop, or certain support networks that you think are very valuable for veterans who are facing these kind of, real everyday life decisions and how to deal with it? Because I could imagine at a certain point, someone could just be paralyzed by the amount of choices they have.
Well, yeah, that's true. But as long as they're doing something, if they're in college, they're probably going to be the most mature students in the college. They'll get along better with the professors than any of the other students will. And out of that, they'll get a certain realization that, hey, I've got my life here is unfolding before me. What do I want to do? And then they suddenly, probably for the first time in their lives, they get to a mode where they start to plan what they're going to do next. Look at the pros and cons of every single decision. And they really haven't had to do that for a lot. The employers find that veterans are particularly great lot to have around, because they do what they're told. First of all, they have a work ethic, and you almost never have to get any pushback from them to do things you want to do, and that's not true of the population at large. So when they get hired or something, they generally are okay as long as they're doing something they want to do. The other thing they're not used to is they'll hang on to something that they don't like, just because they never had a choice before. Some of the things they did in the military, they didn't particularly like, but they had to do it, so they just stuck around. And in civilian life, of course, they don't have to do that now. And they may not realize that until after, several months or maybe a couple of years of really horrible experience, before they don't feel guilty about kissing the bad situation goodbye and starting something else. It's a totally different mindset that has to be inculcated in them, and that's a bad term to use because they've got to develop that themselves. And the ones that aren't able to do that are the ones that'll have trouble adjusting to civilian life.
At this point, we need to take a break. We are talking to Commissioner Paul Galante, Commissioner of the Department of Veterans Services for the Commonwealth in Virginia. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Every government agency has a distinct mission, yet they all share a common vision: to better serve the American people. And it's been the determination of every federal employee that's made this vision a reality and our country what it is today. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton are proud to have helped government clients meet their missions, and prouder still to continue providing support. Today, Booz Allen's 20,000 dedicated professionals have the expertise, the experience, and the solutions to help you continue adapting to ever-changing public service pressures while achieving your goals. So whether you're responding to today's demands or looking beyond the horizon, count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Booz Allen Hamilton, delivering results that endure. BoozAllen.com. That's BoozAllen.com.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report is provided by Raytheon.
In a recent Missile Defense Agency test, Raytheon's Army-Navy Transportable 2 radar, better known as the AN-TPY-2, supported the first launch-on-remote engagement of the SM-3 Block 1A against an intermediate-range ballistic missile. Located on Wake Island, the AN-TPY-2 supported the launch by detecting and tracking the target. This test demonstrates remote engagement capabilities of the system, a major milestone in the first phase of the Obama administration's phased adaptive approach for missile defense in Europe.
5 million hours of experience, 19 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon's Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon's Standard Missile 3 delivers. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community, sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week, host Deborah Roth discusses the controversy surrounding federal employee retirement benefits with Dan Adcock of NARF, Lenny Santacola of World at Work, and Federal News Radio's own Mike Causey.
If you're like most people, you have many financial questions like, can I afford to retire? How do I protect my nest egg? Will I outlive my money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait until Saturday? Call Tabron & Associates Financial Services at 301-773-3923.
Nurse means noble. Nurse means selfless. Mothers nurse their children. You nurse someone back to health. If there were ever a group of people more on the give side of the give-take continuum, it would be news to us. I mean, why does one become a nurse? Because working 8 at night to 10 in the morning is so appealing? Because the glamour of day-to-day encounters with a wide variety of bodily fluids is too much to resist? Nurses are nurses because their capacity to care is colossal. Their sympathy, superhuman. Even when you try to act all steely and businesslike, you can't fool us. We still see the love in the tough. We can still hear that gargantuan heart all squishy with compassion thumping away. So while too often you yield the spotlight for just this moment, we're asking all the nurses out there to do what clearly doesn't come natural and take a bow. Kaiser Permanente. May our 45,000 nurses all live long and thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
How will federal managers improve program performance within the tight budget environment? Find out from agency leaders at Excellence in Government, the premier best practices conference for federal managers, May 23rd at the Ronald Reagan Building. Early bird rates are available through April 29th. Don't miss the event that federal managers say best prepares them to excel. Register now at excel.gov.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Commissioner Paul Galante, Commissioner of the Department of Veterans Services for the Commonwealth of Virginia. And we've been talking about veterans issues and their veterans transition to the civilian workforce. And what does that all mean? And, you know, how can we help our veterans in that transition phase? And you know, when we left, you had touched on something I think that's very important that I think we should explore further, and that's the issue of hiring veterans. I maintain is great for businesses. You touched that on that a little bit, but could you sort of expand on that? If in terms of when I think of a veterans, I think of dedication, you know, duty, responsibility, the things you'd like to see in all your employees. But you could talk a little bit about that. I think hiring veterans is a great investment for business.
Yeah, well, I agree. If you got a known quantity, if you have a gent that's been in the Army or the Navy or Marines or the Air Force for 3 or 4 or 5 years and has an honorable discharge, you know he or she has been through a mill. They've been through all kinds of experience, and they came out of it. They're flexible and they're trainable. Eminently trainable. They are they can make wonderful employees. That there may be a learning curve. It may be faster. So you have everybody in some of the enlisted ratings in the Navy and Air Force, in particular, they have the nuclear power guys that are basically electrical engineers, and they've never been to college. And you have the a lot of the Air Force super technical rates. The Army's got all kinds of critical communication stuff. Anyway, these guys, that's a different breed all by itself. They're not going to have any trouble. Your Snuffy the Grunt may have some problems because they run out of law enforcement. That's the classic. Those guys can go into law enforcement, your infantry types. But those are some really smart people, and they like the nukes and the electrical engineers and all that stuff. They are eminently trainable also, and employers can recognize that. The biggest thing they have that society as a whole does not have, and it's a known quantity, very hard to teach, is discipline. If there's something they know has to get done, they won't sleep until they get it done. And the bulk of our society, unfortunately, in their age group, has the Alfred E. Newman syndrome, where, what, me worry, no big deal. And they can just go off and leave something totally undone and not worry about it, knowing next day they're probably going to get a bunch of grief, and then, you know, it's just, they don't sweat it. Somebody was trained in going to the special forces training down at Fort Bragg or at Fort Benning or, you know, down at any of the Navy training schools, Great Lakes. If they've made it through that, they've known adversity and they've got stuff crammed into them that is going to remain with them a lot longer than your average typical college course is going to. So anyway, they are basically a known quantity. And they have some good traits that are very, very hard to develop in the civilian community without a lot of time expiring.
Yeah, I think your point about discipline is that's just a great point in terms of what it means to sort of stick to it in this to get the job done is something that I think any businessman who wants to be successful can appreciate in terms of their employees. From your perspective, what do you think the keys of us, you know, if a company is looking to hire veterans, what do you think are the keys to a successful, you know, hiring program that, you know, that sort of focuses on or targets or provides, frankly, just provides opportunities for veterans?
There's got to be a certain type of work, and it's got to be something that's goal-oriented. And if you want somebody that you can just give a goal to and run with it and they'll get the job done, your veterans are really a good choice. And the reason is they have just been programmed since boot camp and then their advanced training schools that you do what you're told to do, and you get it done. And when I tell you to do it in a week, that's when it gets done. And it's a great regime to find self-starters. You know, they're not all going to be like that. The Marines call them yard birds, and there's some guys who are going to get through, and they're going to be okay. But all of them, I don't care how. Other than the handful of criminals that every group has, your bad conduct discharges and those. If you get a young soldier with an honorable discharge, you've got a known quantity you can work with. And if he tells you he's going to do, he or she tells you he's going to do, he or she is. God, that's awkward. Thank you, Gloria Steinem. If they tell you they're going to do something, they'll do it. Period.
So I think the message there is you give them goals and things that they need to accomplish. They'll figure out how to do it, and they'll get it done for you.
And if they can't, they'll tell you. Right. They'll say, have you ever thought about doing it this way? And they are taught to think on their feet and make decisions very quickly. And right. And that's a big plus.
We have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Commissioner Paul Galante about our veterans and transition into the civilian workforce. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What do successful small, medium, and large federal contractors, including two-thirds of the top 100, have in common? Membership in the Coalition for Government Procurement. Successful federal contractors know they get the information edge they need on developing acquisition trends and an effective voice to protect their interests from coalition membership. For nearly 30 years, the Coalition's been the trusted voice of industry, working with federal officials to promote common sense procurement. Know what the best know. Join the Coalition today to protect and grow your company's business. Contact the Coalition at 202-331-0975 or visit their website at thecgp.org. That's 202-331-0975 or thecgp.org. Don't be left wondering what will happen to your federal business. Contact the Coalition today.
Why should you take krill oil and omega-3 fish oil? Well, if you are concerned about any of the following, you should absolutely be taking both. And if you qualify, we'll even give you a risk-free trial of a pharmaceutical-grade fish oil combined with the super antioxidant power of krill. But first, you have to answer yes to one of the following. Are you concerned about your joint health? What about your memory and focus? Are you concerned about your heart health? Well, if you want to increase your joint comfort by 28% in just 7 days and promote memory, focus, and heart health, we're going to give you a free bottle of Krill Omega-3 Fish Oil. Just call this toll-free number and claim yours. 1-800-900-6118. We guarantee once you try Krill Omega-3, you won't believe the difference. That's why we're going to send you a free bottle just for calling. Call now for your free bottle and start easing sore joints today. Call 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118. 1-800-900-6118.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future. Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Christopher Smith, Chief Information Officer at the Department of Agriculture.
Cloud, it really is an opportunity, and it's changing rapidly still. And I think it's different parts of the mature that we've already leveraged, and those that are maturing at a lesser rate but moving even more rapidly are the ones we're watching and trying to figure out how do we leverage that. I mean, if you look at data center that was built 6-12 months ago versus one that's being built today, they're demonstrably different in that short amount of time.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
This is Dan Tullis, and I just called
Joel Clark,
one of Select Quote Insurance Services Term Life Agents.
Hi, Mr. Tullis.
Joel, how does Select Quote save you money on term life insurance?
Well, buying term life insurance is all about choosing the right company. Let's say you take antidepressants or you smoke. All insurance companies are going to price that differently. We'll impartially shop all the companies we represent to find you the best price.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I just got a man, 40 years old, who takes blood pressure medication, a $500,000 policy with a highly rated insurance company. His price, $21 a month.
Call 1-800-500-0351 and see how affordable term life insurance can be. That's 1-800-500-0351. 1-800-500-0351. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Nano, or very small, materials are finding their way into products from cosmetics to medicines. Are we ready for them in our food? Nanotechnology might allow more control over how our bodies use food, says Rod Hill of the University of Idaho.
These are materials that a physicist can make or an engineer can make, and the scale that they make those materials at, this nanoscale, is almost identical to the scale of the molecules that occur in our bodies.
Hill says tiny structures might be designed to hold on to certain food chemicals that provide taste but little nutrition, letting them just pass through your body.
You could actually get the same flavor sensation, but with a whole lot less of that stuff that's actually bad for you.
Hill says much more research is needed, though, to determine both the best way to make such products and any health implications. To find out more, go to nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, we're talking to Commissioner Paul Galante, and we've been talking about our veterans in a transition to the civilian workforce. And, I actually can think of no one who's probably had a more interesting or challenging transition back to, not necessarily civilian life, but back to freedom than you, Commissioner Galante. Your background is that you were a pilot in the Vietnam War. You flew 97, I believe, combat missions and were actually shot down and spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in Hanoi. And that, I think, would hold some lessons in your success post-Vietnam, would hold some lessons in terms of stick-to-itiveness and that idea of discipline and just appreciation of life that I hope you could share with our listeners. Could you talk a little bit about your experience as a POW and the things that you sort of went through?
Sure. First of all, Roger, you have to understand that I was a Navy pilot, not just a pilot. Navy tailhook jet aviator flying off an old ship, flying an A-4 Skyhawk, which is, I think, the finest little airplane anybody ever bought. I like to describe it, in addition to being the last airplane the military bought for less than $1 million, it was also the last airplane they bought wherein the pilot was smarter than the airplane.
Okay.
This thing was absolutely nothing digital on it. It was all analog, and it was just fun to fly. It's called Heinemann's Hot Rod and the throwaway bomber, the scooter. It had a lot of nicknames, but I loved the thing. They didn't shoot many of them down. We flew most of the bombing missions at the time I was out, but they could hit it, but they couldn't knock it down because it had manual flight controls. You could disconnect the hydraulics and usually get back out over the water where you could eject safely. And mine didn't do that, and so I ended up, like one of my friends, Charlie Plum, is wont to say, so I ended up joining the Hanoi Skydiving Club, which is unlike normal skydiving. You come down amidst a bunch of people whose homes you had just been bombing and whose countryside had just been ravaging. They're not really happy that you're in their presence. And so it was
it wasn't a warm welcome.
It was a pretty rough go. Yeah. And it took me 12 days to get from where I was shot down, about 100 miles south of Hanoi, into Hanoi, and arrived there the day we bombed Hanoi for the first time, and they were really not happy campers then. And it was so a week after I got there, and I just finished interrogation, was just beaten silly, I was solitary, and all of a sudden the door opened up. There's a guy from my ship, and they handcuffed us together, and we went through the Hanoi March with 500,000 North Vietnamese yelling and screaming and throwing stuff at us. I said, this is not going to be a fun place. And anyway, it went on and on and on and on and on and on. All about pretty heavy torture about once a quarter, and they'd work their way through the camp. We weren't supposed to communicate, but they never totally shut us down on that. So we knew something was coming, and then the keys would jangle outside, and you get that sickening feeling in your stomach, and out you go again, get beat up, and circulation cut off, and just a bunch of little tricks they used to force us to violate our code of conduct and that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
and miserable. Then Ho Chi Minh died, and then presto, it was like night and day. We think they had orders to make our treatment better. The ironic thing was they didn't know how, and they were doing really some really stupid things. But the torture basically stopped after Ho Chi Minh died in September of 1969, and we had miserable conditions still, living conditions, but at least the harassment and the idiocy stopped. Mail was awful. We didn't have any contact with home, and so we aged, and it just kept going and going and going, and year after year after year after year, and then it wasn't until Christmas 72, they moved us, the bombing had started up again after a 3 or 4 year hiatus, and they moved about half of us up to the Chinese border just in case. They didn't want a lucky hit to take out the only leverage they had on Uncle Sam.
Yeah.
And so we were living in this camp up in the Chinese border, and I was sitting there at Christmas time. I started counting, let's see, Christmas 1965, 66, 67, 68, 69, 70, 71, 72. So I've been here a long time, and it never dawned on me until then just how long it was. And I started adding all those up.
Yeah.
And then, ironically, the B-52s hit Hanoi that Christmas season, that they called Christmas bombing. Those missions had been planned in 1965, and they weren't executed until 1972. 60 days later, I was home, and I can't help but wonder, every time I go by the Vietnam Wall and see those 58,000 names on that wall, I just wonder, how many fewer would there have been if these missions had been planned the first time they were proposed, had been executed the first time they were proposed, and so it was kind of ironic.
Yeah.
It's good to see. By the way, General Storman Norman Schwarzkopf went to the same high school I did.
Oh, okay.
And so did his deputy. And, you know, our ever-astute press never picked up on the fact that the two generals in the most successful war we've had since World War II both went to the same high school. Then Schwarzkopf, of course, went to West Point, and the other fellow, John Yosok, went to Cornell. And you'd think our ever-astute Fourth Estate might pick up on something like that, but they never did. Especially when you think about that school happens to be the movie, the school that was in the movie Taps,
mm-hmm.
about a military school is trained in martinet. Anyway, that's my claim to fame. I went to the same high school with Storman Norman did.
Hey, I recall one of the things that when I talked to you before is that you said that one of the most difficult things that you had to deal with when you were were imprisoned was listening to the treatment of your comrades when they were going through the difficult times, the torture. Can you sort of just explain what you meant by that? Or,
you know, there are three things I learned. Really hard things I learned when I speak. I do a lot of speaking to schools. And they don't get talks like I give. They don't have it. But anyway, I just tell them the three things I learned was. I used to take a lot of stuff for granted. I don't take anything for granted anymore. And it's just, you know, it's I'm just really happy to be here, and I don't assume that I'm going to have a good breakfast that morning, because I might not. I took off from the ship one day expecting to have a hamburger, and next thing you know, I did my nylon letdown in North Vietnam and couldn't do it. The other thing I found out was, no matter how bad I had it, and this is good, torture, bad treatment, slapping around, getting brutally beaten, somebody else always had it worse. And I found out that if I worried about them or thought about them or tried to help them in some way, I'd somehow feel better myself. And that's a very valuable trait and valuable skill to learn. And the other thing I learned, I always close every talk I ever give with this, is that there's no such thing as a bad day when there's a doorknob on the inside. And you know, when you think about that, that sort of ties it up. And I bet, you know, I've given a couple of talks at prisons, and they said, "We don't have any doorknobs on the inside here." I said, "Exactly what I've seen. The duck just came down with the word in his mouth, and you get the prize."
Yeah, yeah. Well, with that, I just wanted to give you a chance, you know, based on your experience and what you went through, and then your, you know, very successful, you know, career, both military and civilian, after you came back from Hanoi. You know, are those three things that you just talked about the keys, you know, in terms of your positive attitude and how you were able to successfully transition, you know, just the thoughts that we could leave with for our veterans?
Yeah. Well, transition for me coming back is a whole lot easier coming this direction than it was going the other direction.
Right.
And but it was, I just came out with this super positive attitude. It was like a coiled spring. And when they let us out in 1973 and came back, I couldn't wait to get started doing stuff. And it was this incredible thirst for knowledge. I turned myself into a computer geek because I was fascinated with digital stuff. And my boys call me the world's oldest geek. I'm the only guy my age I know who helps them when they have problems with their computers. And it's you just come back. That's never stopped. I still just relish every single minute of every single day because I keep thinking of the 2,432 days that were exactly the same as the day before. It was like Groundhog Day 2,432 times.
Well, yeah, I guess you more than most anybody can appreciate, you know, what every day, the gift that every day is. So thank you, Commissioner Galante, for joining me today and sharing your experiences. And most of all, thank you for your service to your country and for all the work you're doing on behalf of veterans in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And up next on the show will be John Sissel. John Sissel is the Director of Membership for the Coalition for Government Procurement, and we're going to be talking about the Coalition's charity golf tournament that benefits the wounded veterans, provides support for training for veterans who are transitioning to the civilian workforce. That's next on Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Every government agency has a distinct mission. Yet they all share a common vision, to better serve the American people. And it's been the determination of every federal employee that's made this vision a reality and our country what it is today. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton are proud to have helped government clients meet their missions and prouder still to continue providing support. Today, Booz Allen's 20,000 dedicated professionals have the expertise, the experience, and the solutions to help you continue adapting to ever-changing public service pressures while achieving your goals. So whether you're responding to today's demands or looking beyond the horizon, count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Booz Allen Hamilton, delivering results that endure. BoozAllen.com. That's BoozAllen.com.
Nano, or very small, materials are finding their way into products from cosmetics to medicines. Are we ready for them in our food? Nanotechnology might allow more control over how our bodies use food, says Rod Hill of the University of Idaho.
These are materials that a physicist can make or an engineer can make, and the scale that they make those materials at, this nanoscale, is almost identical to the scale of the molecules that occur in our bodies.
Hill says tiny structures might be designed to hold on to certain food chemicals that provide taste but little nutrition, letting them just pass through your body.
You could actually get the same flavor sensation, but with a whole lot less of that stuff that's actually bad for you.
Hill says much more research is needed, though, to determine both the best way to make such products and any health implications. To find out more, go to nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
My name is Abe Lincoln, and I've been thinking about this cool place that you can go. It's a website that I speak of called USA.gov. It's government information online, and that's mighty fine. USA.gov. Got questions on your log cabin? Housing answers, yeah, they have them. USA.gov is your official source. Get Social Security info, whatever that is. ID theft prevention tips, because that's your biz. Even changed my address, and I don't mean the Gettysburg. fine government auctions, jobs apply for student aid. Hey, I wouldn't lie, I'm Honest Abe. It's government made easy for the people. Take it from the dude in the stovepipe hat. USA.gov is where it's at. So don't wait 70 years to check it out. And that, my fellow Americans, is what I'm talking about.
How old were you when you stopped playing? Chances are it didn't happen overnight. As you grew up, information got elevated, imagination got downgraded. We stopped playing and started stressing. Kaiser Permanente encourages you to follow your kid's lead and put some play back in your day. It's as natural and necessary as sleep. Physically, play boosts immune function, lowers blood pressure and cholesterol. And what it does for your emotional and mental health is pure refreshment. Toss a ball around and see how it lightens your mood. Notice how a hand of cards changes your outlook. Jump rope and watch your creativity soar. Best of all, play keeps you young, like no pill, no program, no procedure can. So take that kayak lesson you've been putting off. Learn a new song on the piano. The truth is, the day you stop playing is the day you start aging. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community, sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week, host Deborah Roth discusses the controversy surrounding federal employee retirement benefits with Dan Adcock of NARF, Lenny Senecola of World at Work, and Federal News Radio's own Mike Causey.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly 1 in 3 children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. For this segment, we're going to be talking to John Sissel, Director of Membership at the Coalition for Government Procurement, and we're going to be talking about the Coalition's charity golf tournament to benefit wounded veterans. Good morning, John.
Hi, Roger. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing great. It's good to see you, and I know this charity event, this golf tournament, is a labor of love for you. Tell us a little bit about the purpose of the event.
Yeah, the Coalition's golf tournament provides funds to, I think, provide a great service between our members and the private sector and those organizations that are actively aiding wounded veterans to transition back into the workforce. Essentially, what we do with the proceeds from the golf tournament is we produce events that allow the private sector to come together and learn how to best set up a program to go about putting these people back in their workforce. And in general, it's a great opportunity for industry to discuss what works for them. And it's great for the coalition. We can act as a conduit to do that. And it's a very rewarding program for us.
Well, the coalition, we just recently had, you know, one of these seminars where we did bring together, the government and industry folks to talk about best practices in terms of support for wounded veterans. I think we had, you know, we had all four services there, I believe.
We did, yes.
Representatives of Air Force, Army, Navy, Marines, and I just used that order for purposes of discussion. That's not an order of priority, folks out there.
Marines might take exception to that.
I'm sure they would, but... and that was a great event. It provided an opportunity for networking for organizations that are there to help support that transition. So we used funds from, you know, we raised from last year's golf tournament to help put this on. We also had support from Booz Allen Hamilton, who provided their auditorium to us at no cost to host the event, when we appreciate and thank them for that as well. And with regard to the golf tournament, right, it's scheduled for August 31st.
August 31st, coming up in a couple of months. We're soliciting players and soliciting sponsors at present. We've got a couple of months to go, so we're doing pretty well. I did want to add, not only from a federal standpoint, but we had some great private sector people involved. Microsoft had their director of vet hiring there.
This is at the event we had.
Exactly. The training, just to jump back to the training event. Booz Allen, as you mentioned, one of our Keystone members, were very gracious to provide space as well as their HR personnel to talk about their program. We had VSE, so it really was a great dialogue. The tournament on August 31st, it's going to be at Whiskey Creek again this year. That's up in Imesville, Maryland. I don't know the folks out in Radio Land have played there. It's a great, great golf course. Always kept in super shape. They do a wonderful job for us. It's a full event, lunch before the event, great golf with some contests, and it's a four-man scramble. So you don't have to be the best golfer in the world, but you might want to bring somebody.
John, that would be me. Okay. That would be me. I haven't played golf since my second child was born. That's 11 years now.
And I'll try to make sure you're not on my team.
Okay.
Then follow up with a lovely reception. That great food. It should be a beautiful day. A lot of fun. We do get some great support from our Keystone members, McKenna Long, Booz Allen, General Dynamics, the Hahn Group, and Northrop Grumman. But this event is a standalone, so we're also looking for some of the private sector to step up and help us raise money so we can continue putting on these great programs.
So in terms of... what are long-term goals for this event and for what we do for veterans? Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, this is just one piece of the puzzle, and we're trying to raise the profile of this event and raise, you know, additional funds that we can use to support veterans. But, you know, just from your perspective, like the long-term, you know, vision for this.
Absolutely. I think our goal ultimately is to not need these programs, so that the private sector has developed hiring practices and programs within their structure to get these young men and women into the workforce. We're going to keep producing these events the next few years, I think, from a strategic standpoint. But ultimately, our goal is to take this tournament to the next level and really raise a lot of funds that we can then use to support the organizations that are helping our veterans on the front side when they get back, helping them with resume development, helping them with employment training, helping them in areas that they may need some special help with, especially the kids coming back who've unfortunately been wounded or disabled in some way. So from a long-term standpoint, we'd love to give a check for $100,000 to some of these great organizations that are helping these kids. Short-term, we're still plugging away, teaching people how to put them to work. All of these folks need to get back in the workforce once their service is over. They want to. They're eager. And anything we can do to make that process easier for them all, is a good thing for us.
Yeah, and this year, like as we already talked about, we've had one training event or one sort of networking event that was hosted by Booz Allen. And, I think, our long-term goal is, as you said, but in the short term, we want to be able to have two events or three events a year,
right,
and be able to raise enough money, this year to be able to have two or three events, in the following year to support folks. And it is, just from my perspective and listening to Commissioner Galante, it and just from what I've seen, when I work for the government and vets who went to work for GSA and that sort of thing, it makes great business sense to absolutely hire veterans. And anything that we can do as an organization to help support their transition to the workforce, obviously we'll do whatever we can. And I think this golf tournament's a great opportunity to do that.
As we find out in these programs that we put on, Roger. The one thing that steps forward or comes forward from the discussions is how capable these young men and women are, how eager and capable. I mean, if you're an employer, those two traits right there are desirable. Somebody who can come in, is really wants to work, really wants to learn your system, and really wants to become part of another team. One of the things, if I could,
sure,
talk about one of the sponsorships that we've put together. It's unique in some regards. At least it's unique for our tournament this year. I've heard it done in similar ways with other tournaments. But we have an Honor Americans Whole sponsor. And in this instance, a corporation would come forward and they would buy this sponsorship. And they would bring, as part of the sponsorship, three golfers. And we will go out to the Salute Military Golf Association, which is a nonprofit that is training young men and women to play golf who've come back with a disability, and pair your three with a wounded vet to play that round of golf as part of your team. It's going to be a real feel-good thing. Not that participating wouldn't be, but I've done this to spend 4 hours with a vet who's learning the game and overcoming some obstacles in doing so. It's quite rewarding. So I'm really looking forward to it and hoping that some of our members and some of the private sector, not just our members, will step up and sponsor one of these holes and spend an afternoon with a returning vet. It's a very rewarding way to spend 4 hours.
Well, John, when you're making the foursomes, you can put me with a foursome with one of the vets.
Well,
I would love that.
I haven't seen your sponsorship money yet,
that's
Roger.
Well, well, I can at least ask. I'm looking forward to the event. It'll be August 31st. John, provide your contact information if folks
sure
want to.
If you're interested in playing or interested in sponsoring this event, you can give me a call at the office. That's the Coalition for Government Procurement. My direct number is 202-315-1055.
John, thank you for that information and your contact information. I want to thank you for coming in and talking about the charity golf tournament, and thank you for working on it. We really appreciate it. And I want to thank Commissioner Galante for coming on the show and talking about, the transition that wounded veterans and veterans, sort of the challenges they face and the things that can be done to help support them. And just sharing his experiences when he's a POW in the Hanoi Hilton. Thank you, Commissioner Galante. And with that, I'm Roger Waldron. This is Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30 only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.